This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 46, recorded on October 6th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a very beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. We haven't had rain in a couple, it seems like a couple months now, and every day has been like 75 or 80. I know as I go back and listen to the podcast, I've always said a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. I think we're going to pay for it this winter with some serious snow. But for now, it's absolutely gorgeous, and gorgeous weather is in sight. And speaking of Bellevue, we're right on the Missouri River, and the water has gone down. So the flooding that killed us this summer has gone away. I called it the slowest moving natural disaster in U.S. history. It took 3 months to crest and destroyed quite a bit of farmland, quite a bit of property, and rerouted the river in some places. Is done and over. So it's good that it is gone. We post this show each week live to theaverageguy.tv. And speaking of that, this is the last time I'll make this announcement. I hope that we are moving our feeds off of Podomatic and onto IX web hosting, or just basically onto the site that we use. And so this is the last show. No, I'm not even going to post this one. The last show is the last one. And no more posting to Podomatic. So if you haven't changed your RSS feeds by now, go out to theaverageguy.tv. Look on the right-hand column. We've got a whole bunch of graphics out there that tell you what to do. If you're an iPod guy, there's an iPod link. Just click on it, and we'll automatically load it to your iTunes. If you haven't done that for the podcast, you might want to. That way you guarantee you get the show each and every week. We also have an RSS feed that you can click and associate with just about anything. And so you can go out there and click that. It's got all kinds of links. The most common one would probably be the Zune player or whatever kind of podcatcher that you use. Everything is out there that you need to get the show automatically. Get that done today. I know some of you have done that. I've seen the numbers go up on our feed burner feed, but many of you haven't. And I don't want you to stop getting the podcast. So get out there, get it set. Set it and forget it is kind of what I like to say. So you can find the show here. Send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can find us on Twitter. Just send me a tweet over at Jay Collison. That's my last name, Collison. Or you can find us on Facebook just by searching The Average Guy Podcast. Okay, big show tonight. Of course, we'll talk a little Steve Jobs, a little Apple news. We've got a bunch of other things. Christian is back, and that's always a good thing. And so let me just get started by introducing Christian. Christian Johnson is all things behind BIOS mods and an AP student with lots of homework. Christian, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing all right, guys. Hanging in there. Busy week. Minimal time for technology this week, but that's all right because it's always ever so present, whether you're an academic or a tech. So,
yeah. Yeah, lots to do, and beginning of your school year, so to speak, and I'm sure they're loading you up with projects that got to get done maybe before what, December? Is that you on semester? You on quarter? What?
Yeah, we have quarters.
Okay, so that's even quicker. It's coming up even faster for you. So, all right, good stuff. Well, it's good to have you back. Thanks for letting your dad jump in your absence. Yeah. Gary always does a nice job, and so glad to have you back. Also with us tonight, Bill Pullman. Bill is Cable Devil over at the Home Server Show forums. We missed him last go-around in his last rotation because of Hurricane Irene. Bill, that seems like 100 years ago, but a little bit of damage in your area?
Yeah, we had a lot of wind and a heck of a lot of rain. Not as bad as they actually predicted. But, you know, got some damage in the kitchen and just trying to recover from that, waiting for the insurance company to finish up everything. And, you know, we're back here and got the computer going. We're ready to go.
That's good. And I heard just before you came on, you had installed some SSD drives into your box. Is that right? Is that the one you're using right now?
Yeah, my main box, I had a Vertex LE. That was your old school SATA drive. So I got a Force GT, which the initial bookmarks, I didn't get all the drivers in yet, but the initial bookmarks are benchmarks are actually double the speed, you know, because it's using the SATA 3 controller with the 6 gigabit. So
very nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Are you seeing you'd had a SSD drive in there before, so you're not going to see that drastic of a performance change, are you?
It is actually double the speed. So instead of like 240, we're at, you know, 490. But the biggest thing, I took the old one out and I put it in my laptop. Nice. And it's an old laptop and it's like a whole new laptop.
Wow. Yeah, that's we've talked about that quite a bit here on the show, that the best way to revive an old laptop is to throw an SSD drive in on it. And I've got an old Mac PowerBook G4 that, you know, it's got a Pentium Pro, whatever they used before they went to Intel. And so that can't be right. It doesn't really matter. It's just a pre-Intel chip. There we go. And for whatever reason, I'm having trouble remembering that tonight. And I can't go to Lion. You know, I can't go to even Snow Leopard. It's a little slow. I've thought of pulling that drive, and I don't have the OS disk for it anymore either. So that's a little expense there. And you think, oh, maybe I'll just throw it away. But you know what? I use it for the monitor for the show. So it runs, the studio software really, really well for what we do here for the podcast. So it's just sits there. It's a monitor. It works well. It's still hanging around. So, you know, I don't know.
As long as it works.
Yeah, it's nice to have a Mac, you know, around for some testing and some of those kinds of things. Anything else been keeping you busy over the last month or two?
You know, just actually I had two builds to do for customers. The first time I got my hands on a Z68X board, Gigabyte. So that was real nice to see with the SSD in it. And, you know, just the options in the BIOSes are going just crazy, you know, if you don't keep up on everything. I mean, I go into this BIOS and there's 30 different things just for timing on your memory. Christian, I'm sure you know how much it's come to this.
Yeah.
And I got this a lot of features where you're like, you know what, I've been out of it too long. I just have to read up on every little setting. And it was nice to get someone with a lot of money to buck up for this new build. I had it here for like 2 weeks just to play with it. He's like, nice. Are you done with it? I said, I've been done for a week and a half. I'm just testing this with Crysis and everything else.
Yeah, you're like, are you kidding? I've been playing with it for 2 weeks.
So. Crazy? You're not getting this back.
Christian, in the BIOS mods world, is it hard to keep up with everything that's going on? I mean, I'm sure those guys are cranking new BIOSes out all the time, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't stick your nose in it and kind of keep with it, you're losing out on a lot of the options that are coming and going, especially with EFI and UEFI. That's kind of a whole different ballgame. But even the traditional boards and stuff like the Gigabyte stuff that he's trying out, there's all sorts of options for overclocking, memory timing, tuning the chipset. If it's AMD, you got to worry about your hypertransport clocks. If it's Intel, you got to worry about your bridge speed. So there's all sorts of clocks and voltages and RAM timings that, if you're not familiar with them, might not be a good idea to touch them. So
yeah,
good enough. Yeah, I don't really mess around with it as much. Christian, I wonder how you find time to, with all the things that you do, that to mess with the you know, mess with the BIOS. Hey, one quick update. We talked to your dad last week about you and this project that you were working on to shoot the signal from some IP webcams for is that that get anywhere? How are you doing on that?
It's been on hold with a lot of stuff, but I think we've definitely decided on getting the Netgear Range Max router setups with the dual band wireless N, and trying to push it that way. And also apparently the park that this place is in now, the actual town government is talking about putting in wireless in all the parks anyway.
Oh, nice.
So it may be something we can just broadcast off that feed and get a direct line to. So
that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. A little Christian update on your work projects around town. Well, before we get to, I think, the bigger news of the day, and I don't want to dwell on that too much longer. It's probably been beat to death out there in the media, but at least it's worth a talk. I did spend some time out in the Bay Area this weekend. I talked a little bit about it last night on the Home Server Show, over there at thehomeservershow.com. But I got the opportunity to head out to Silicon Valley this weekend, and I got in there Friday evening, came back Tuesday night, a whirlwind weekend of a lot of travel, a lot of BART, which is the Bay Area Rapid Transit system that's out there. And I took that thing a couple times around the city. Love public transportation in the Bay Area. I did get stuck on Sunday night. It was 9 o'clock, and a buddy of mine said, hey, I think Caltrans stops running at 9. And I just sat down to dinner in San Francisco, and I needed to be back down in San Jose. That's about a 45 or 50 minute drive when the traffic is good. And I was like, crap. And so I had a little bit of a technology fail on this one. No, actually more of a human fail. So I quick grabbed my phone, got Hotwire up on my phone, and went to their car reservation, looked at vehicles at SFO, and found one for $20. And I thought, no way, right? Now, what Jim should have done is went ahead and booked it right there, right? I should have taken it. Okay. And I thought, oh, well, great. Cars are available, right? I'll get back to this after we're done with dinner. I was in an engaging conversation. And so I set my phone down, and we went through the rest of dinner. And so I thought, as dinner was over, I was walking my way back to the BART train, which runs till midnight but does not go all the way down to the Bay Area. And so I get on BART, and I said, okay, I'll lock the car in while I'm on BART. And sure enough, it was in 2 hours. It was gone. And I could not find that deal. And the cheapest vehicle I could find at that point was $150.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow. Yeah, I'm like, crap. So major tech fail, you know, hey, if you get a good price, you should take advantage of it. So I ended up calling my buddy on the phone. I said, hey, I cannot get down to your place. Can you, any way you can drive up here and pick me up at the airport? And Dave, my high school buddy who I'd gone out with on Saturday night, and we watched the Huskers lose together, drove all the way up to San Francisco to pick me up at the airport. Thanks, Dave, for doing that. I appreciate it. Kind of bailed me out. We got in about 1:30, and I had to be up at 5 the next morning to get back into town and do some things. So it was a good trip. I got out to Drobo on Monday. Mario Blandini and friends over at Drobo got to see the inside of their brand new facility there in San Jose down by the airport. Got a chance to walk through the labs. And if you love Drobos like I do, it was Drobo Haven. I mean, it was awesome. There were Drobos everywhere. Listen, they had Drobos rack mounted, and they'd have like a rack mounted shelf, and on it would be like 4 Drobos across it, and there were just hard drives everywhere. And I was just like, how much storage do you have here? You know? And he's like, a lot. And they do all their own software testing, and so all those Drobos are fired up, and QA is going on those things with software testing. Had a couple Drobos torn apart on the bench, which was very cool to see, the boards that go into those things. Mario told me at one point they intentionally make those things difficult to get into. They don't want folks tearing them apart and modding
like
them.
Mac Mini.
Yeah, because I know Zadler would have that thing just ripped apart in no time and be trying to figure out how to jam that thing into his computer case. But so I got a chance to podcast with Mario. That's a podcast I'll produce this weekend, and we'll put out as a special podcast on this feed here at theaverageguy.tv. So good. They've got some new equipment that's on its way. Nothing I can talk about. A little NDA stuff as well, which was kind of nice. But they've got some stuff coming forward that is going to be very, very cool, and some things I've been asking for and asking about for quite a while now. So good trip in there and a good podcast. So make sure you follow the feed so you can get that podcast as well. Guys, one of the best parts. And Bill, do you get to travel much for your job? Do you get to fly around the country much?
Not anymore.
Okay.
Job before, yes, but now.
No. All right. But so you know what it's like to fly around the country. You get stuck on a plane. Yeah. It's really the last place in the world, or at least in the United States, where you can't get internet, right? I mean, it's, and until recently, getting internet on the plane has just really, for the most part, it's either been a boatload of money, it hasn't worked well, and you get up there, you get in the air for a couple hours. You're basically reading a book, right? I mean,
you fly Southwest.
I flew Southwest this week.
Sorry.
No, it's good. And they recently announced $5 Wi-Fi each way.
Wow. That's like no-brainer.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? I was falling all over myself to get online and, you know, I get my credit card out. I was happy to just give them $5.
Did you benchmark it?
You know, I didn't. I know. I should.
Tim, what are you doing?
Come on.
Well, what I was doing was having Skype conversations up there. What I was doing, and it worked awesome. I even tried starting a Google Hangout to see if I could get anybody to join me. Now, it was Friday night at 10 o'clock, and everybody was doing something else at that point, which you should be doing. It's Friday night, for God's sakes, get out, get away from your computer, and go out and do something. But guys, it was dynamite. I mean, it may have been better download than I get here. I mean, it was incredible.
I logged in. I used Live Mesh. I logged into my PC at home, and I actually, I could. It was no different than when I log into my PC from work. You know, as far as you know, you'd think it would refresh, would be slow. Not a chance. And this is just on Live Mesh. That's not the best, necessarily the best remote access software in the world, but very functional up there. I even moved a file into Dropbox, and then it did a Dropbox sync. So it was only the file was on my desktop at home, right? I couldn't get to it, so I dragged it off the desktop into Dropbox. Dropbox synced it onto the laptop on the plane. There it was. I mean, like that.
That's great.
It was cool. So one drawback is it's not on every flight yet. They don't have it on every plane, so they are outfitting them right now. And there's an asterisk by the $5.
Uh-oh.
And it just means it says for a limited time. So I think, you know, it's like a beta. We don't know. Will they keep it? I'm sure they'll test it and see what kind of usage they get with it.
Do they have a bandwidth cap?
Not that they advertise.
DVDs, Blu-rays, get them while you're up there so you don't get in trouble when you get home.
Yeah. Well, you know, I imagine they're going to do some testing to see just what people are downloading up there. And if it becomes a traffic, I mean, if there's more traffic than they can handle, of course the price would go up, right?
I would think. $5, I mean, come on.
It was outstanding.
Please.
And it was easy. If you're on that flight and you don't want to pay, you can still get to three services. Of course, you can get to southwest.com. So in theory, you could change your flight on the flight. So, you know, say you're going to land in Vegas, right? And you were scheduled to go to Reno and you're like, I don't want to go to Reno. Let's go to San Francisco. You could change your flight on the flight.
That's cool.
On there, right? Very cool. So Southwest is available. They have of course, Sky Mall, right? The ever famous Sky Mall is available. You could buy overpriced gear from Sky Mall.
No more magazines.
Yeah. No, magazines are still in there for now.
Oh, okay.
I imagine at some point, though, maybe those will disappear as well, unless they just replace them with a Kindle. Nah, anyway, they won't do that. And then, wouldn't that be cool if you could like rent a Kindle on the plane that had Wi-Fi connect? Anyways. And you could also remember, I don't know if you've ever flown overseas, but oftentimes where they show you the movie and stuff, and when the movie's not playing, they'll show you where the plane is at.
Oh, that's the worst one, Tahiti, from the East Coast. Right. Oh,
yeah. So they have a page that you can go to, and it shows you exactly where the plane is on Google Earth. So
that's the worst thing to watch on an 11-hour flight. Trust me.
Doesn't move, does it?
Doesn't move. No matter what you're drinking or whatever you're taking, I'm not sleeping on a plane.
It's crazy.
And it's like, you're here. 13, 14 hours to go. You're like, you got to be kidding me.
You're here? You're still here. Oh, by the way, you're still here. Yeah, we did a 13-hour flight, L.A. to Seoul. And that's a long flight to be watching that stuff. But if you're kind of a map nerd and you want to know where you're at, at any given time, that is free. You just fire up, connect to their Wi-Fi, and you can get all that stuff. You don't even need to pay the $5.
That's
so
cool.
Very, very cool. We were actually going to try and do a Spartan Radio podcast from the plane. I actually did the whole podcast from the Phoenix airport while I was waiting for the next flight. I almost missed it, by the way. It was they were calling my name as I was trying to close out the
go OJ.
Stuff at home. Yeah. Same thing. Used Live Mesh, logged in, started everything here at home. So started the recorder, started a Procaster, got everything going on my PC here at home. And then I just used the laptop. I have a little mini Nettop that works perfectly for a portable podcasting station. Plugged in my headset and microphone. I know people in the airport thought it was just nuts, right? Walking around with a laptop and a headset on. But we got the podcast done, and the bandwidth at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport was dynamite.
And how much did that cost?
It's free.
Wow.
Yeah, Phoenix is free.
I don't think I've ever been in an airport so far that hasn't made you pay.
If you go to Google and type in free airport Wi-Fi, it will bring you up a list of the airports that are now free. So if you're traveling around the country as much as some, and you want to know where you're going to get free Wi-Fi, and having it on the plane, guys, game changer. I mean, it's just I could get tons of stuff done. The only thing they need to do now in the longer flights is make sure every seat has power.
Oh.
You know,
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
4 hours of Wi-Fi, although Southwest I don't think even has a four-hour flight, but 4 hours of Wi-Fi, things are pretty down. Anyway, so it was a very cool tech weekend, lots of stuff going on. I went to Oracle's Open World, and so if you want to talk enterprise tech, which is horribly boring, that was the rest of my time there, was going to meetings and talking about enterprise business intelligence technology.
Did you see Mary Jo Foley?
I did not. No, this is Oracle, and she's not.
Oh, Oracle. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I didn't see. Of course, I watched the keynote with Larry Ellison. And you know what I found out? Well, let's use this to segue into the next topic. So Larry's keynote was on Sunday night. He typically opens the show and does a very dynamic keynote. And as we were watching the keynote, I thought he was just, I don't know where he was, but he was not on the stage giving the keynote. And he was saying things like, and so we've got this new Exadata machine that does stuff fast, kind of stuff fast, you know, and he was I'm serious, in the keynote, it was, and I'm like, Larry, where are you? I mean, come on, dude, you can't just mail the keynote in. So I was kind of critical of him and said that to a couple of people. And then I kind of found out today, I kind of put my foot in my mouth. So Larry Ellison and Steve Jobs are very good friends. And of course, Steve Jobs, as we know now, was very, very close to death on Sunday evening. And so I think I needed to cut Larry a break. I'm not good at cutting Larry a break because those guys are bazillionaires. And Larry in the past has been a guy who is very aggressive and has patience for nobody. But under the circumstances, of course, with the passing of Steve Jobs and a very significant technology figurehead, a very sad day around for most people. Everyone recognizes the contribution that Steve Jobs made technology better over his, especially the last 10 years at Apple. I mean, there are some questionable moments. Christian's phone is ringing.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
Dave opened the show last night with a ringtone that's very, very familiar with Apple, you know, with the phone, with that and the iPhone. Bill, any thoughts on the passing of Steve Jobs?
You know, he was as much as, every time I say it, I say, I don't want to be in Apple's box. I don't like how they took Linux. I don't like, you know, all that stuff with their operating system. They took open source and made it their own. But when I look around the house, I have five, Apple products, you know, the iPad 1, iPad 2, the Mac Mini, then you look at your iPods, the Nano, and my iPhone. You know, it's amazing that he had the vision that he did to say, hey, you're going to do it my way or that's it. You know, he kept everyone in a fence, in a box, but you really had to admire what he did and his vision for everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been critical of the Apple model and what they've done in the past. But you can't not say the guy didn't change the world with technology, and certainly the way we look at smartphones today. I mean, the tablet smartphone world is different today because of the iPhone, and the MP3 player market, the way we listen to music today is different because of the iPod. And so certainly his vision, and you know what, everyone calls him a genius, and I'm not going to say he's not. But, you know, he did a lot. He worked very, very hard and hit it solid with the iPod, which, of course, launched the iPhone and then the iPad, and it hit all those buttons, at least in the last decade. So I'm sure Apple will miss him. I don't know. Anybody follow the stock today? Did it drop soundly?
I don't know about today, but I know it dropped after the keynote.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Well, speaking of keynote, our keynote speaker and live from Melbourne, Australia, is our good friend Andrew Morris. Andrew, welcome. I know you had a call that you kind of had to be on, and so you sacrificed the beginning of the show for the call. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Probably a bit like everyone else in the tech world, a bit surprised with the Steve Jobs news. I think it's one of those things that everyone knew was coming but kind of wished that it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. And that the type of cancer that he had is just, He was able to live a lot longer than most. That cancer usually takes those patients in about 6 months, and
he
made it for about 3 years. And so, you know, I do hope that the treatments that he was able to afford, because I'm sure it was not cheap. I hope that leads to some you know, treatments for future pancreatic cancer patients.
Absolutely.
We had a very close friend who had that same cancer, and it just took her very, very quickly. And so hopefully that will lead to that. Christian, any thoughts on the passing of Steve Jobs?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty neat how pretty much all the major companies, I mean, from Google to Newegg, had some sort of memorial notice and reference to Steve Jobs for the past, well, yesterday and through today. So I think in that regard, it's pretty cool to see the tech community support Apple. And if you read some of the news articles and stuff that's coming out about the commentary, there's a lot of people who are Google execs and from these other major companies that have worked with Apple, have competed with Apple, and all of them have something to say about how Steve in some way helped them with their own career while promoting his own. So I think he's a Renaissance man in the sense that, you know, not only was he able to invent something that made him famous and respectable in the tech community, but he was able to run and manage several companies throughout his career as flawless and effortlessly as he did invent some of the devices that everyone is used to using today. So definitely a big loss.
Yeah, I think the other one that a lot of people don't realize is the whole Pixar involvement too. I mean, we wouldn't have movies like, you know, Monsters, Inc. and all those types of films if it weren't for Steve Jobs, because, I mean, that was his baby, wasn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to go back and kind of see some of that stuff, if you watch on YouTube the address he gave to Stanford when he got that when he got the commemorative degree from Stanford. I'm trying to remember. It was like a doctorate degree.
Honorary degree. Right.
And he mentioned a lot of that stuff and how it played out. That was interesting to listen to. So, I mean, for the most part, yeah, pretty big hit for the tech community. But
yeah,
it's kind of sad, too, to see people like the Westboro Church, who's going to be protesting at his funeral.
Oh, that's too bad.
That's pretty pathetic.
That's too bad. Nobody needs to protest a funeral. Nope. You know what I'm saying? Pathetic. You're a pretty big loser if you're protesting somebody's funeral. You know, let them pass in peace. So, you know, whether you like the guy, love the guy, loved what he, you know, hated the guy, loved his products, hated him. We've talked a little bit about that here in the past. This is his week. And there'll be a lot of tribute and a lot of memory to him. The guy, while not necessarily the inventor of some of these products, did what is nearly impossible, and that is have a great idea, bring it to market, and then just make a ridiculous amount of money on it. And you know, some people think that's easy, and that's very, 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 very difficult to do. And it's also hard to maintain a company at that level. Some people think, oh, if I had revenues in the billions, that life would be on easy street. And trust me, that gets harder the more money your company makes. And so he was able to control that and make it happen. Apple has billions of dollars in the bank. They will probably bail out the U.S. government at some point in time with their cash. So, you know, it's a sad day. I wish the Apple, you know, corporation luck as they move forward without him. And although, you know, I'm sure he has not been effectively managing for the last couple months as he's been very, very sick. And so we wish everybody the best. Any other thoughts, guys? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's really nice that the, you know, we all knew about Dress Up Like Steve Jobs Day, which is the 9th of the 9th.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that one's been around for a couple of years now. So they sort of encourage people to, you know, wear the jeans and the turtleneck.
That's this 9th, October 9th?
Yeah, September. It was this past September the 9th, in line with his resignation from Apple. And it looks like they've declared Steve Jobs Day to be Friday, October 14th.
Hmm.
So there's Steve Jobs Day 2011.com.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's good. Throw that in the show notes. And there's a lot of stuff going on. If Google Plus just blew up with with news this
Same
morning.
With Facebook,
yeah. Yeah. It was just everywhere. Man, I'll be honest with you. I haven't logged into Facebook in a day and a half. I better go out there and check it. It's been a while. Okay. Well, anyways, appreciate letting us talk about that on the show. I'm sure that's been a hot topic around the web. Love him, hate him. Certainly the world was, I think he left the world a better place. And maybe, you know what, I might even buy an iPhone. Who knows?
Oh, that's bold.
No, it's behind. That's what that is. So, all right, Christian, you got some things. Andrew, we'll give you a few minutes to get your mic out in chat. Just said, no, I shouldn't. So we'll Sprint. I should say Sprint is finally getting on the Apple bandwagon, and we'll deliver the iPhone to Sprint here shortly. And I'm very, very tempted to move off my Android. I've had a lot of problems with it in the last week or month or so, and it has let me down in a pinch. And as we go to change phones, I may jump over and get an iPhone. All right, Christian's Corner. Christian, what do you got for us?
All right. So I wanted to kind of kick things off with surmising a lot of the things I've done as individual speed tips of the week, and B, just kind of creating what I call the average system performance kit for when someone sits down at a computer and says, why is this so slow? So there's a couple things that I haven't mentioned on previous shows before. There's a couple things I have. So if you've missed those shows, or if you are familiar with some of these things, then hopefully it will help add to your toolkit of diagnosis and success on either your own computer or someone else's. So the first major thing, again, is a disk defragmenter. And I've had varying levels of success with the disk defrag in Windows. I know it's set to the schedule automatically, I think, by default in the Windows installation. But there's this great defrag software from OsLogix. Their version of disk defrag is just exceptional in terms of the time it takes to defrag the entire hard drive. And I think it does a little bit of a cleaner job of, you do get a little bit more performance out of their version of the disk defrag than you do the Windows. And the grid, it has two different modes. You can do your regular scheduled defrag, and then there's a special one called Optimize. Now, again, this particular software package from them plays into some of their larger stuff, which is paid for, but the disk defrag software itself is absolutely free and, quite frankly, absolutely flawless. So I've had pretty good success with that. In fact, it's running right now because it's been quite a while since I've defragged myself. So that's first on the list. The second thing I think a lot of people forget about is CheckDisk. When was the last time you ran yours? And I think really the important thing to keep in mind here is making sure you run it if you have an unexpected shutdown, because people will have, you know, either BSOD or their power goes out or something of this nature where their computer is suddenly off and from being in a running state and doing things. And when they start it back up and see everything is fine, they go, oh, okay, well, I hope that doesn't happen again. And, you know, if it does continue to happen, then you're going to corrupt your hard drive. So if you get in the habit of running your check disk after every time you have an unexpected shutdown, it minimizes the risk and damage of your personal files.
Shoot, I might have to run that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while, especially in the laptop, it might get shut down by mistake or the battery runs out. That's the other thing that's happened. So you're saying, Christian, every time, so my battery goes on my, you know, it automatically shuts itself down or it just shuts off. And I get that warning that says Windows experienced something. And do you want to start this normally? Right. That screen.
Right.
Is that a candidate for the check disk? Is that point I should run that? And I can run that. It's been a long time since I've run a check disk. Do I run that through the tools on?
Yeah, there's a pretty quick way to get to it. Just start menu, My Computer. You right click your operating system drive and you hit properties, and then when you get your properties dialog up, if you click over to the tools tabs, it'll be the top thing that says error checking, and it says this option will check the drive for errors. You click check now, it says this system is the system drive and needs to be restarted to be scanned, and you go ahead and do that. But
okay, so if you have time, you need to make sure it's going to reboot on you. That's not something that can be done online, right? It has to be offline for that to
Unless, yeah. which I again recommend it. I've been getting in the habit of doing it myself just because it does minimize a lot of the casual corruptions from Windows when the drive doesn't spin down properly.
Is check disk, I hope I be very careful I say that. Is check disk faster on an SSD than it would be on a spinning drive?
Yeah, definitely faster. Keeping in mind, actually, you brought up a very good point that I didn't mention. If you have an SSD, don't run disk defragmenter, because all it's going to do is decrease the life of your SSD. And SSDs really don't need to be defragged because of the architecture of the drive. So don't run it. If you see it scheduled on Windows, stop scheduling it. If you see anything that says the word defrag, make sure it's unoperational, assuming you have an SSD. Otherwise, if you got 2 terabyte drive, 3 terabyte drive, storage drive, spinning drive, any sort of drive with a platter, run check disk.
And the mainstream is still on spinning drives, right, Christian? I mean, right. We're not really, there are very few for the most part who have made their way over to SSD. It's just, it's still not mainstream, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. So once you get those two bullet points down, go into their device manager and see what's going on. Normally, the primary things I check to make sure are up to date, most important is the graphics, then the chipset drivers. I don't know how many chipset drivers I've seen that are either A, the wrong chipset drivers, or are B, chipset drivers that are the standards from Microsoft instead of the specific ones. The biggest case I've seen this in is if you have an Intel-based motherboard, go to Intel.com right now. And if you have ICHR9, ICHR10, find out what your Southbridge is. Once you find out that ID, you need to go on Intel's website and get their latest driver package for your chipset, because your default drivers that are going to be on that computer are not half as optimized as the ones that you get off those Intel packages if you're running on an Intel chipset. So find out the name of your Southbridge, type it into Google, and get to the Intel site to find those chipset drivers. Same method of success for if you know you have an ATI or NVIDIA graphics card, make sure you stay up to date on the catalyst. I'm probably the biggest person who doesn't do that. I just updated mine today. It was 8 months old. They had a whole new catalyst version out, whole new video engine out for my HD graphics card, which is a monster. It's kind of scary. It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. I like the way you say it. So Christian, let me back you up a little bit. So what you're saying is, so I buy a new ATI video card at Best Buy, right? And I install it and Windows finds the drivers and it looks great on my monitor and I'm thinking, sweet. I mean, I'm getting the resolution that I'm looking for and I don't change it. Are you saying that the Microsoft drivers that it's using are not the best drivers for the card? Is that what you're saying?
Right. In the case of the Windows update for the drivers, when you plug in that card in the computer, the first thing Windows 7 is going to do is going to check with Windows update to get the right driver. Now, when it checks with Windows update, it's not getting the latest driver from AMD or ATI or NVIDIA. It's getting the latest driver from Microsoft's WDDM repository, which is their digitally certified driver that says Microsoft has tested this driver, has run it in X, Y, and Z scenarios, and therefore they're willing to push it through Windows Update. But many times you'll find, especially with the newer graphics cards, the later versions of the drivers and the catalysts unlock a lot more performance and resolve a lot more bugs that aren't included in that default Microsoft version.
Wow.
And also to keep in mind is the fact that the Microsoft driver that installs, it is the AMD driver, but it won't install things like the Catalyst or the HDMI out driver or the audio packages that come with a typical Catalyst installation or NVIDIA installation. So if you're using Windows Media Center, if you're doing any kind of video gaming, video editing, go get the Catalyst, go get the NVIDIA control panel. Make sure you're keeping tabs on that.
Bill, you just built a box, right, for your friend? And so I assume that you did all that? Did you go in and load all the right drivers? Okay.
Yeah, definitely have to go and get the drivers from the manufacturer. You know, you might be able to get away with the network driver, maybe the OYO driver, Realtek or whichever. But as far as your SATA, your Southbridge, Northbridge, I mean, you have to by all means, get it from Intel, AMD, if you got a Fusion or whatever it might be.
So if I go into my driver, my device drivers, and say, and it says that's the Microsoft driver, chances are I don't have the manufacturer's driver. Is that right?
Chances are it's not the fastest, most optimized, and most up-to-date driver.
Okay. Wow. I guess I've known that about some of the things, but I always figured if Windows found it, I was okay in most cases.
In most cases, that's average performance. So if you want to make sure you're tweaked, you got good speed, and especially I think the Intel Southbridge chipset drivers is the biggest example because especially on, I want to say, Windows Home Server, even the X485, and there's some other Intel-based boards. They're Intel Media Boards with the integrated chipset and graphics and stuff. You have to go to the website. It just... Microsoft drivers don't cut it in comparison, especially if you're running SATA or Intel SATA RAID. So
good to know.
Especially with the SATA on the Sandy Bridge with an SSD. A lot of blue screens of death. You had to upgrade your firmwares on the SSD like 16 times, and they finally started to work it out between them and Intel. And it seems like most of it's ironed out.
Right. So make sure you're doing your catalyst. Make sure you're doing your chipsets. Again, networking sound is kind of iffy. The other instance or scenario is if you can't find your device driver. If it shows up as a little yellow bubble, you don't have a driver, that's not good. It means your computer is not initializing hardware the way it's designed to, and it's going to be slower. And if you're having trouble identifying the device, like it's not, you just install the operating system and you see four yellow bubbles and you're like, okay, and run Windows Update and nothing's showing up, go right-click the properties and get the properties for that device. Make sure you go to the, I think it's additional, or it's like driver extent. Let me get it up.
Hardware ID I usually use.
Hardware ID, yeah. Copy the hardware PCI vendor ID right into Google, hit enter, and see what comes up. Normally, just by copying and pasting that vendor ID into Google, you'll get enough of a sense of what it belongs to, and then you can narrow your search. But get the right driver. So that's pretty important, too. Normally, if you copy, I think, the second hard drive ID listed in the device manager properties, you'll get the best search results that come up. Okay, and then if you feel comfortable about your drivers, your hard disk is looking all right, then it's time to go look into some operating system specific things. Primarily, go back if you've already done so, or if it's been a while, make sure you go back in the MS config, because let me tell you, if you're installing stuff, if you got Adobe Reader, if you got iTunes, if you got Java, they keep adding stuff like night and day to your startup entries whenever a new version comes up or a change comes up. So you just want to keep going in there and making sure you're unchecking stuff. I'm pretty sure every time iTunes and QuickTime is updated, I have had menus added back into my start entry for MobileMe, iTunes, and QuickTime, none of which I want to be trying to start up while my computer is. And I don't mean startup as in the application comes up. I mean as in all the core runtime services are trying to initialize when more important things, for that matter, are updating. So if I see things like Google Update, Windows Live stuff, Adobe Reader and Acrobat Manager. I mean, these are things that I could care less about having when I start up my PC.
So I'm checking mine out right now. So I've got Zune that starts up. I almost never use the Zune player. I don't have a Zune. You know, I use it to, we tried it out every time it, we talk about it on the home server show. So I can just check that off, right? So run, I go to the run, type in msconfig. This comes up. I'm at the startup tab, and then I can turn that off, right? And it won't start up the next time I boot. Okay.
Yeah, just uncheck it. Really no need for a lot of that, especially a lot of the update services. And then this is a old speed tip back from one of our earlier shows that we did. Make sure you go to your boot tab. Set your timeout to 3 seconds if you don't have a second operating system running. Don't ask me why. It's one of these quirky Windows things. It does shave a couple seconds off your boot time. And also go to your advanced options button and make sure your number of processors is checked and set to the max number. For some reason, having those defined in msconfig does make your startup experience quicker. So once you've gone through that...
Hey, Christian, real quick, one question for you. Sorry to interrupt you, but this is the only time I get to talk to you most weeks, so I'll ask you these questions. So in my case, I have a Core i3 Is that in it, so it gives me the number of processors, the option of 1, 2, 3, or 4. Is that a 4? That's a 4 processor chip, or is it a 2?
That's a 4.
It's 4. And does it what? Well, is it smart enough to just give me the number of processors that I have available?
Yep, it'll give you the maximum number that's available on the
chip. Just go in there, number of processors, select 4, click OK, and then I change the timeout to 3 seconds. That's right?
Yes.
Okay, very cool.
So, I mean, in my case, it was I have a 6-core, so I select 6, hit apply, and OK.
All right, nice. Didn't make me reboot either. That's always nice.
That one won't. I believe changing your startup entries will ask you to reboot, but you don't have to right away. So once you get that all squared away, I know a lot of people are using iTunes, so let's talk about iTunes. If you have it installed and you're not using it for any network-related things, disable, disable, disable Bonjour service. There's no need for it if you have no network devices. I still haven't found any devices that actually I need with iTunes. I believe even iTunes still connects to my MediaSmart without Bonjour enabled. Really what it is it's a network listener that's installed with the iTunes QuickTime packages, but in some instances it can become really buggy, and what it does is it will log event errors to your event viewer literally about every tenth of a millisecond. Every tenth of a second, so 0.1 milliseconds. No, is that right? 100 milliseconds. 0.1 seconds. So you're getting all these continuously logged errors repeatedly, and it just brings your hard drive IO way down. And I've seen computers in my house like halting to its knees because the Bonjour services is logging event errors. So even if it's not logging event errors, I just honestly recommend disabling it unless you have some specific need where you know, yes, I need Bonjour for X, Y, and Z.
You know, that is a service I've actually installed to get some networking type things working in the past. It is a good network discovery tool. Right. But I'll be honest with you, I haven't used it in maybe 2 years. A lot of that stuff is all worked out now. You don't need it anymore. But
in some of the old
XP days, it worked pretty well.
Right. But I mean, for the average person syncing their iPod up to their computer who is not looking to discover network things on their computer, then go ahead. Go ahead, Bill.
I want to go back to Smidge. I'm sorry. What about the people with the Intel processors? Should they be looking at anything with hyperthreading? Should they go to 8 if they have a quad core?
Yeah, definitely. The hyperthreading does recognize as a core in Windows as a separate core. So when you hit your drop down and it says number of processors, it will give you the max included with hyperthreading. So.
Okay. And then PCI lock and debug, you can keep on checking.
Yeah, you don't need those. Some people think there is some speed advantageous to defining the memory, but I've only seen it with the processors being defined. So make sure you have that set up.
Okay.
So, so we're good to proceed?
You know what I did? It did ask for a restart when I finished msconfig. So make sure you're ready to restart. Although I said no, I did get the option to say no, but you never really know. You know, Windows sometimes just takes over. So hopefully it won't reboot right in the middle of the podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
That would suck.
So you're thinking, all right, well, I disabled Bonjour service. Can I disable any of these other services? Honestly, there's only a couple services. Windows, I got to admit, especially with Windows 7, is doing a pretty good job of only running the services that you need. Some of the services you can definitely just disable right now, and even if it says manual, just disable it, is remote registry, tablet PC input if you're not on a tablet PC, telephony if you are not running dial-up, which most people aren't. Some people want to disable the internet sharing services, ICS. If it's a wired computer and you're never going to use wireless, some people disable the wireless zero configuration. Some even like fax if you're not connected to a fax machine. So a lot of things you can kind of go in and kind of figure out what they are. If it sounds like a name you've never heard or recognized, best leave it alone. But if you see it something like telephony or fax or some of these really generic ones, go ahead and disable them if you don't need them, because they're just more IO going in when your services start up at Windows. Cool. So, yeah, if you have your – so we've pretty much covered – let's see. We've covered the hardware aspects. We've covered our hard drive aspects, and we've covered some of our services. You kind of want to go back and make sure your hard drive is really running the way you expect it to. Two quickest ways to do that is to download the HD Tune Pro trial, or if you have the license, go ahead and run it. Make sure you're getting the recommended read-write speed for your hard drive, because if you're getting lower performance, chances are either A, your hard drive is getting ready to fail, or B, there's something in Windows just eating away hard disk activity for no reason, and that's definitely going to cause your boot time to slow, and it's going to cause your normal operations to slow. So make sure you're getting consistent read-write performance. Also, if your hard drive is chattering up a lot during startup, make sure you go to Control Panel and check your indexing sections. See what Windows is adding to its search index. If you're not really using search that frequently, just disable it altogether, and you'll definitely save on I.O. But I know it indexes a lot of locations, such as your app data folder and some things that people really aren't even searching for at all. So make sure you go in and clean it out, because that will decrease a lot of your chattering during startup. So yeah, that's pretty good. And then when you get all those things done and you're kind of up to date, you want to see how did that affect my restart time. So I normally recommend, just for the sake of how much percentage time you're increasing on average, doing one trial before you do all of your tweaks and one trial after. But there's a startup script that'll be included in show notes that I've mentioned before from 7Forms. It's a little Visual Basic script that you just click it and run it, and it restarts your computer. And then when you're back in Windows, it tells you how many seconds it took since the computer rebooted to do a total reboot. So that can really help show you if you've shaved down your seconds. And I've seen really big stuff. I've seen stuff as much as 2 minutes per boot saved.
Really?
After running that script.
That much, huh?
On some computers that weren't optimized. I think I've, at most, the lowest I've ever seen it on a Windows Vista 7 PC is around 50 seconds. That's if you have a pretty standard setup and you're not doing too many crazy startup things. But again, the longer your operating system has been in action, the more just general kludge it's going to slowly accumulate. I think I've had Windows 7, you know, I've had the same Windows 7 instance between my old computer transferred to the Beast, which I've had built for
right
for a while now. So, I mean, this particular instance of the operating system has been strong and living for several years now, and it has a ton of developer SDKs. I mean, I have almost 300 gigabytes worth of software installed on here alone. So definitely I have on average about 400 programs on this desktop. And, you know, even though the operating system has been around for a while, it still boots really great. And I think it's because you just make sure these things are maintaining themselves, and you can keep a relatively nice running PC with a lot of programs on it as long as you're doing the upkeep every once in a while.
Yeah, it's good advice. I think maybe every 6 months, you know, like take your car in and get its oil changed.
Exactly.
Do the maintenance on your computer.
Right. So, yeah, and the little amendment to the PC kit for optimizing is, if you think your computer is still acting sluggish, then it's possible you are a victim of recent phenomena. The first thing that I found out recently, I was simply disgraced, was Firefox 5 and 6. Now, I've been suspecting this for a while, but I didn't really realize it until I realized it, was that Firefox 6, and it started in 5, has a huge, and I'm not, this is not over exaggeration, it has a huge memory leak in it that after reading the developer forms, they've been beating it into the ground with Mozilla, because it took them two versions to realize and acknowledge it as an actual issue and not just a add-in that's giving them issues or whatnot. But I've had Firefox 6 with maybe 5 tabs open. It was using 1 gigabyte of memory. Now, I can have 50 tabs open in Google Chrome and have it use about 30 megabytes of memory. So I had my sister, who's in college, who has, you know, 50 billion tabs open all the time with her research stuff. She calls me up one day and says, I just don't know what's going on. I've rebooted this thing, and every time I put it back to sleep and come back out of it, it's just the slowest thing. I can barely browse. None of the programs are coming up. And I said, well, when's the last time you rebooted it? It's been a while. So she rebooted it.
That's called, by the way, that's called the Mike Howard effect.
Right.
Just so we know.
So she rebooted it. Yeah, it seems kind of faster now. But as soon as she started browsing again, same thing. Everything was coming to its knees. And this is an i5 Dell laptop, Core i5. It's probably one of the quickest laptops on the market. And she's sitting here having problems. Come to find out, when we open up Task Manager, Firefox is eating like 20 megabytes per second that it's open and running. And she was up to like 1.2 gigabytes of used memory for Firefox.
Yeah, that can't be good. I mean, you got to reboot every once in a while. Bill, have you had that same, you put in chat memory hole. Have you had that same experience with Firefox?
For the past at least 6 months, pretty much switched everyone in the house and friends and relatives to either use, you know, the new IE or to use Chrome. We just kept seeing like people, but exactly what Christian said, they keep their computers on, they let them go to sleep, and in the morning they shake the mouse, they're up. But my wife has 18,000 tabs, and each tab is another instance. If you go look in Task Manager, you'll see the different instances of these tabs, and it just, they're just sucking major amounts of memory out.
What version of Firefox are we up to now?
We're up to 6.0.2.
All right.
And
so
version 5 and 6 really is when we started noticing it. 5, I was suspicious, but I thought it might have been Firebug at the time. By version 6, I knew it was Firefox.
Okay. Well, you know, I always tell folks, if you're not using the Firefox extensions, just come over to Chrome. It's a faster, easier, less problems. It's been my experience. It could be different.
That's the resolution I gave my sister. I put her on Chrome and imported all her contacts and stuff, and it's been lightning quick.
Yeah,
she still has her 50 tabs open all the time.
Yeah, you know what though? I have noticed on Chrome, you know, like when we do a podcast, I'll probably open 20 tabs during the podcast with various news, especially in the home server show. Seems like I get a million of those things open. And if I leave that browser open for a day or two, I might, you know, at night I might go to bed, leave it open, come back the next day, do a few things. Chrome does get a little sluggish after a while. Yeah. And I don't know what that is. I just close it out and reopen it and life's good again.
Definitely. And finally, I know I love reiterating hard disk issues in my toolkit, but it's important because the number one bottleneck on your PC is the hard drive, whether you want to admit it or not. You can have a single core Sempron running, and if your hard drive's really fast, you could have an SSD with a single core Sempron in there, and it'll be faster than your quad core with a 2 terabyte external drive in some scenarios. I'm just saying, hard drive's always your bottleneck. So if you're hearing weird clicks, if you're seeing that programs just aren't loading right, loading as fast, chances are your hard disk is dying, which means if your computer is still up, then go ahead, make a backup, go to Newegg.com and hit the buy now button on a hard drive of your choice and preference. Because let me tell you, it's going to save you a ton of headache having that backup done before the click goes. And hopefully you're in the habit of backing up regularly.
Nice.
And it looks like Bill's really excited about his OCZ Veritex. I can't even remember what it is anymore.
Yeah, it's an older one, but it's going into another laptop.
You just replaced, yeah.
Yeah, this is another Vertex LE I bought. I bought two of them at the same time.
Christian, I've got this old, I shouldn't say old, but it's a Core 2 Duo HP. Oh, I should have said that. It was made by a company, not HP, that you've seen it. That's the one that's been up. You've seen that. Okay. It's a little slow. Doesn't run Procaster very well for me, which takes a lot of memory, a lot of processor. Am I going to see a performance boost if I dropped a 60 or 120 gig SSD drive in that when it comes to running Procaster, which is kind of memory and processor intensive?
I'd say video editing is one of the few instances where you're still going to have that bottleneck of actual raw calculations per second in the video end. You definitely see a faster load time on the software itself. but you'd still have the same bottleneck when actually recording, and it would be faster because the ability for the program to save the recording to the drive is a lot quicker, which frees up your I/O and actually offsets some of the calculations the CPU has to do. But still, if your graphics card or CPU is shady, you're going to have some performance lag. And I think one of the few areas where you need a good hard CPU and memory setup is for those video intensive things. But
okay.
You know, daily internet and email, if you're just having slow problems, get a new hard drive. Get something spicy. I mean, if it's a 2 terabyte drive that hits 90 megabytes per second, great. But I mean, I still know a lot of people who are running these like mammoth 80 gigabyte Maxter drives from like 2002 in their cool little Windows Vista box, and they're getting like 30 megabytes per second read write, and it's like, what are you doing with your life right now?
So
and the answer is, I'm waiting for my computer to start up. And I'm like, yes, I know, go to newegg.com and hit buy now.
As so speaking of newegg.com, you've got a deal of the week.
Yeah, so the 3 terabyte XT is rocking and rolling on Newegg for 180, but if you're inclined to go find promo codes, the promo code, everyone drumroll, EMCKAHA26 will get you a $40 discount on the 3 terabyte drives.
Holy moly.
Bringing your total price down to like, I think, around 150 free shipping for 3 terabyte XT, 64 megabyte cache, 7200 RPM drive. It's great. It stores things. It's quick. You get a promo code and it's Newegg. So,
very good.
When you click Newegg, you always feel good. Like, I'm a techie. I bought from a good place. I'm pretty sure I should just stop discarding the cardboard boxes that all my Newegg hardware comes in. Should just build one of these like stack piles with all the Newegg boxes and take like a artistic photo. Cause
got a lot, right?
Yeah. I can't even remember the last time we didn't buy some generic hardware that wasn't from Newegg. I think the only thing we bought within the last couple of years that wasn't from Newegg was we just bought an OpenBench test case, ProVantage. It's a Li&Li, and it's designed for open bed. It's an open bed case, which means you slap the motherboard on and you can keep pulling and adding hardware in like a open bed. It's like a test sure. case basically, yeah, for testing right. hardware.
Yep.
And it's a really hard case to get a hold of, and so we got it through ProVantage. So
nice.
But most
Christian, yeah. What's the last thing you bought on Newegg?
Last thing we bought.
Yeah, what's the last thing you bought on Newegg? Bill, I'm gonna ask you this question too, so be thinking about it. What's the last thing you bought on Newegg?
I wanna say it was the hard drives. I think there's actually something in the basement that I haven't seen yet that we got from Newegg that you haven't seen yet. I know, right?
Like I don't know. We buy so much I can't even keep track of it.
That's how bad it's been with homework. No, but
yeah.
Because we bought the HD Home Run Prime. We got it at some special price from, I think, like J&R or something.
Those guys clear that stuff out pretty quick. Your dad was talking about that in last week's show.
It's awesome. So awesome.
Yeah,
just be able to like watch up in your room, like on a network. And like they have support for iPad. You can watch TV and record it on your iPad over the network. It's awesome. So especially like these people who are paying all this money for these like $30 a month DVRs when you can get a $5 a month cable card and have several devices having a recording party in your household network. Why not? Cool.
Cable card works real well. If you have questions on that, just go back to last week's show. Yeah. Gary explains that pretty well. Chat, what's the last thing you guys bought at Newegg? Or I'll even take Amazon. We'll throw that out there. Bill, I saw you looking around. You were trying to figure out what the last thing you bought is, weren't you?
This room is such a mess. It could be. I'm looking for invoices at this point. No, actually, I bought two SSDs.
Okay.
Because of all the problems with some of them, I ended up going with the Corsair instead of my normal OCZ. Corsair Force GT120, which is in this box now that I just got done 2 minutes before the podcast. Okay. Not even done, but
all right.
So
nice.
Very cool. I bought this. If you're watching on the video, and if you're not, you're listening to the recording, we do record the show each and every week, 7 p.m. Central on theaverageguy.tv/live. But I got this microphone courtesy of Mr. Andrew Morris a couple weeks ago, and I had it on the stand, but I'm trying to drag this in. I got the shock mount for it this week and got that installed. It's a big old behemoth. you know, for this microphone, it is a big old behemoth shock mount, but it really does look cool, I think.
I think it's cool.
It's big and bulky, but
we were joking how you look like Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh. The I'd have to have it coming down, you know, see if I can do that. You can't see it if I do that. The microphones changed the equation on the podcast, and this is a Yeti Blue, and those are like less than $100 now on Amazon. Easy to get if you're doing any kind of podcasting. It is kind of nice to have that. I've monkeyed around with switching back and forth between inner ear earbuds and these headphones, and both the headphones sound great. The earbuds not as great. But they're more comfortable. So I kind of go back and forth on that. But a little podcasting rig on this works well now. I think I've gotten it all figured out on how to get the right sound. It was a little bassy at first. So if you go back wondering why all of a sudden my sound got real bassy, that's because I switched mics. And so we've worked to try and get that bass sound out of it. And I think it's okay now, guys. What do you think?
Yeah. Sounds great.
Good. Cool.
And I think the last thing I want to say, one of the last purchases was the 16 gigs of RAM that I was talking about on a deal of the week.
Yeah, that's $85, right?
Can't beat that price. Yeah. Come on, DDR 1600 at $85. That was like $250 to get a year and a half ago. Yeah. So we bought some of that, and there's a couple more motherboards we put in. So getting ready for some more builds. And then to close up an extremely extended edition of Christian's Corner.
Are you going to talk about, hold on, before you get going, I see the notes here. I made a promise to some folks that I wouldn't talk about a Windows version that's brand new on this podcast. Are you going to talk about?
It's not about the version that everyone else is talking
about. Okay, go ahead, go.
All right, so not mentioning the version everyone else is talking about, Windows Server 8, Server, S-E-R-V-E-R, not that other word that we're bringing up, is announcing disk pooling. So it looks like they're bringing back some form of drive extender that was lost in Windows Home Server 2011 into the generic server release for whatever replaces Server 2008 R2. And it's called Storage Specs. So while there's not a lot of details out, it looks like it's the same kind of idea where there's no external storage array, as was the whole concept behind the drive pool and home server, that you can just add drives through software and create a drive pool. So looking forward to that. I think that's something to be interested in. But again, at this point, I still have like a lot of question marks around the thing no one wants to mention and the server edition, in terms of if they're putting all this cool, neat server grade stuff that was like part of home server and whatnot into the new edition. How is this going to play into such a to the cloud version of the OS no one wants to talk about?
Yay, so. Cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Christian, we talked a little bit about that. I talked with Zadler about that a ways back. There are some kind of funky requirements for that.
No doubt it's Microsoft.
Yeah, it's not as straightforward as you think. So, you know, it's not like you take USB drives and plug those in.
Right.
Right now it looks like they're only working on SAS drives and some other weird requirements. So, and of course it is a server and it's designed for an enterprise environment. And so most of those folks are going to either have some kind of attached storage, or, you know, they're going to use higher quality. Well, that's probably the wrong way to say it. They're going to use different equipment to attach those drives a little bit faster to attach. So it's not really designed Windows Server. Okay, this is my opinion, by the way, that Windows Server 8 is not really designed for the home user. And it's not the way that's set up, or that drive pooling is set up, is not something you're going to take a crappy Dell Centrino box like we did with version 1 and make a Windows Server out of it, right? It's designed for enterprise class hardware. So check those requirements out. If you're interested in that, go out, just Google Windows Server 8. And there's some documents out there that, especially the ones from Microsoft, that talk about some requirements. We'll probably spend a little time this weekend. Let me segue a little bit. And as we close up Christian's Corner, we'll probably spend a little time on Sunday, or maybe we can spend a little time on Sunday. Zadler will be around. Sunday, 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern, we're moving Rich's Random Podcast Generator to Sunday night. I'm going to be busy for the next two Saturdays, and so is Rich, and so we're going to need to do it on Sunday. So maybe that gives some of you an opportunity that haven't done that before to get on the podcast. We just open that up to anybody who wants to come out and talk. We call it the Weekend Tech Chat. And if you want to come out and do that, you can find probably the easiest way is track me down on Google+, and I'll add you to a circle, and we'll get you added in. We really do.
If you're over 18.
If you're, yeah, sorry, Christian. We got. You know what, dude? You just need to hack in there somehow. I challenge you, hack Google.
Oh, I'll just email you my password. It's so easy.
Yeah, you know, I should just open another account. There's got to be a way for you to get into Google+, Christian.
Gotcha. My emails are not really all that exciting. So.
Well, so this weekend, if you're interested, Sunday, 3 p.m., hopefully we'll have this podcast out by Saturday. And if you're listening on Sunday, 3 p.m. Central, 4 Eastern, put that into Google to translate it into your part of the world. And you get an opportunity to talk chat. John Zadler, jump in there with us, and maybe it's time to come back and talk a little Server 8 and the requirements for that. All right, some good stuff. All right, you know what? We've run out of we've lost Andrew. Andrew's in-laws came, and he said, "I'll be right back." So he's late to the show.
I wonder if he ran out of the house.
He's late to the show. He comes in and talks for a few minutes. I really wanted to get a follow up on his touchpad experience. He talks for a few minutes. He says in chat to us, "Hey, my in-laws are here. I at least got to go say hi." Well, that was like 30 minutes ago.
It's a big hi.
Yeah, it is. So I guess he must be a big deal. So Christian, anything else? We've come to the end. We've run out of material. Bill, anything you wanna throw in there? Maybe we'll take questions from the chat. We've never done that. Maybe we should just take a few questions from chat. What do you think? We got how long? Let's see how long we've been going here. Hold on. Oh, an hour 20.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's how long the recording's been on. We probably didn't start the show. It's probably just over an hour. There was Christian, while you were talking, there was a big iTunes debate going on in chat, and my friend Mike Howard was just adamantly against iTunes. I mean, he almost defriended me.
Kind of like HP.
Yeah, kind of like you and HP. What's your boys, let me ask you, what's your opinion of iTunes at this point? I mean, I used to use it a lot. It is a big memory hog and a big pig on a Windows system. It doesn't run very well. Bill, what's your experience?
iTunes should only be on a Mac. There's no reason for it to be on a Windows machine.
Well, but if you have an iPod, you have to use it, right? If you have an iPod and you have a Windows machine, you have to use it, right?
It's like they did it on purpose.
So Gary on the video, Gary's, is that a cookie?
Yeah.
Christian? Oh, did he bring you one too? Are you guys baking fresh cookies at the Johnson house?
Was he wearing a pipe vest?
Oh, that's awesome. I think it was. Bill, Gary likes to come in when he's not on the show. I should probably just put him on the show every week.
He's great. I love him when he's on the show.
Because he rolls in a robe, and then he makes faces behind Christian, and you know, I should just have him. Christian, I probably should just have him on the show every week. He's a great fill-in for you though. So he does very well.
He brings cookies.
Yeah. So is that chocolate chip?
Yeah. So everyone can hear how delicious it sounds over the stream.
May I?
Warm
out of the I am so jealous. I am so
trying
jealous.
To stay under 180 here.
I should only be, you know, used to be Sarah would ask me about midway through the show, can I bring you a drink or something? You know, she's just quit doing that. So I'm kind of screwed. No drinks. So Christian, do you have iTunes on your PC there?
Yeah, I have iTunes. It's sluggish. I've had some issues with just the store being unresponsive, but I always hit up the freebies of the week on iTunes Store. I'm obsessed with some of them.
Really? For the music?
Yeah, mostly okay. The, like 1 week they had the they had a Bob Sager bonus EP with like 7 tracks on it. The whole EP was free, so I grabbed that.
Nice.
I grabbed Bob Sager.
Hey, Christian, let me ask you this question. So if you download it from iTunes for free, can you do you feel like ethically you can share that? So if I said, hey, Christian, send me those MP3s, is there an ethical dilemma there? Would you send that to me?
Because
it's not DRM anymore, right?
That's true. It's not DRM anymore. I went to see, well,
But I'm really going to find out who's my friend here. Bill, are you going to send those MP3s to me?
Give me your Dropbox account.
Yeah, Dropbox.
I don't play an instrument anymore.
See, my answer to Jim would be go to Subsonic where I can share the link to you. And then you can get the stream. And then if you're a privileged user, you can download the actual MP3. So.
Oh, now I see a little bit of Andrew. He's typing it. Oh, back in a few minutes. So we'll somebody tell Andrew we're almost done with the show. Andrew, we need you. He's there. He's smiling. Are you listening, Andrew? Can you hear us? He's smiling. So, so the question is at hand. You download it from iTunes for free, right? You paid nothing for it. Can you share? Can you give me that MP3 and be? Is that ethical?
Legally or morally?
let's say legally.
Legally, I believe it's still copyright infringement.
Yeah, but I could have gone to iTunes and got it for free.
You could have.
Now, and you're not broadcasting it, or you're not That's putting true. It on a site to give it away in mass.
If you read the 5 billion terms of service pages that come with the iTunes store, I'm sure somewhere in there it's
allowed. I'm sure it doesn't allow it. I'm sure it doesn't. Mike Howard says, if this is being recorded, the answer is no. Andrew, welcome back.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Hi.
How did that go? You had you had some family come in that you knew?
Yeah, the in-laws arrived. And I figured I'd better go out and say hello. And
yeah, that's always good for the marriage, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And are they staying through the weekend?
Yeah, they're staying only for the weekend. I thought they would have been here for a bit longer, but they decided to only stay for the weekend. Then they're off to Adelaide. So.
Oh, okay, very cool. Adelaide's a really nice city down to the south, right?
Yeah, west.
Isn't that southwest? Well, I guess it's straight over west, isn't it?
Yeah, straight over west. Yeah, so it's probably about 8-10 hours over. So, my father-in-law was in Vietnam, and they've got a reunion over there later this month.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So, very cool.
Yeah, but they got the van. Got to do some repairs on the van tomorrow, which will be interesting because their push bikes they had the bikes mounted on the rear bar, and the rear bar decided to try and twist itself off the back of the caravan somewhere in Sydney. So.
Oh. So how long have they traveled to get to you?
They've been on the road for 3 days.
Wow.
But they're not doing big Ks. They're only doing small miles. So.
Okay. So Sydney to Melbourne is how many hours?
I did it weekend before last, and we did it in about 8.5.
Oh, okay, that's not bad. So it's a full day.
That's two stops. That's like fuel and pit stops.
That's Omaha to Chicago. That's Omaha to Denver. That's San Francisco to LA. So that's not too bad. And then 18 hours. So one day are they gonna try and do that in one day over to Adelaide?
No. I think they're taking about a week.
Okay. Oh. Shoot, that's easy.
Right. So they'll do a couple hundred Ks, stop for a day or so, another couple hundred days.
And that's the southern coast of Australia, right? I mean, that's correct. All. Yeah, is it pretty much coastline most of the way for them? Will they be in and out of the coast? Or?
I think they'll probably go inland. The coast road's a bit of a bastard of a road. It's got a cliff down one side and
probably the difference between Interstate 1 and I-5 in California for our California friends.
Yeah, pretty much. I know those roads. Pretty much the same.
Yeah, it's beautiful, but your car may end up on the beach upside down.
You don't want to do it towing a caravan, that's for sure.
Or sleeping, yeah, Yeah.
You're sleepy. don't set the cruise control and get Nick in the back to make a sandwich here.
No. I just, you know, I came back from the West Coast this weekend and had breakfast with my sister in Santa Cruz. By the way, I had just a delightful breakfast at the Santa Cruz Diner, which is kind of a local dives, drives. What do they call it? Drives, dives, and diners, I think, is the show here in the U.S. One of those local places that is just
a chew and spew.
Say that again.
It's a chew and spew.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It, you know, it, and so the gal said, "What are you going to have for breakfast?" I said, "I want eggs, biscuits, and gravy, and pancakes, and just bring that in some kind of combo." I don't care. I don't want to find the combo. Just bring something like that.
That sounds like an artery hard.
Oh, it was so good. Let me tell you, it was just delicious. Biscuits and gravy is just my favorite thing.
Do you have any bacon with
it? No bacon, but there's sausage in the gravy. Maybe I should have.
You should have made that one.
You know, so since this is a tech show and I'm talking about food, let me just say this. So when I got when I used to live out there, there's a restaurant called Togo's. And it's a sandwich place local to the Los Gatos area. And they used to sell sandwiches over at the San Jose State. And the sign fell down. It said sandwiches to go. And the sign fell down. And all that was left was to go. So this place just got to be known as Togo's, right? My wife and I, Sarah, we used to go to Togo's all the time. So when I was there was a Togo's across the street from the diner. So I took a picture with my phone, right there, uploaded it right to Facebook, then copied her on it and kind of teased her right over the, I mean, within a minute, you know, it was going right to her phone saying, So it's just amazing to me how fast. And now that, now that all my pictures are just automatically loading right to Google Plus, if I do go to the iPhone, that might be something I would miss. But because I'm sure there's no Google Plus on the iPhone yet.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, there is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not very good though.
Okay. Yeah.
Although I'm a bit with you. I'm at the reaching the stage where I'm getting sick of Android.
Yeah. I am too. I am too.
I'm sick of it running out of memory. I'm sick of it hanging. Well, not hanging, but it sort of gets performance degradation, and you know, I'm constantly looking at it, going, I've got to clean out the memory again. You know, I've got to uninstall more apps because I can't work out where it's consuming all its memory from.
Right. Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass.
No, it is difficult, and I've found my Android phone has let me down. When I'm in a pinch, when I need the phone to respond to me,
it doesn't.
It absolutely doesn't.
It's horrible.
It's
why you need Evo.
Well, you know, I don't know. And
I'm telling you, the Snapdragon processor has got to be what makes the difference.
Yeah.
That Snapdragon 1.2 gigahertz thing is probably what lights it up.
Yeah.
I got a Snapdragon 1 gigahertz though, and it's meh.
Yeah. So Christian, you're on the Evo now?
No.
Oh, okay. Bill, what are you on?
I'm still on the truck.
You still got the dinosaur.
The dinosaur 6.5 Winmo. Although it has the HTC. That's really good.
Have you hacked the BIOS on that thing yet?
It has. Yeah. I actually did write the lead ROM to it so that you can put whatever cooked ROM you want on here. So I have it's like the Sprint version, but it's a cleaned up version. The developer got rid of all the Sprint bugs with it. So
nice.
And you have to hack the boot ROM for that, so it just runs the loader. So
why am I not surprised?
Yeah.
And that's the name of my next band, Hacked My Boot ROM. It's a great band name. Hacked My Boot ROM. Bill, what are you running on phone?
Because I need it for work, I'm actually running the Apple 4G.
Oh, okay. So you've come to the dark side.
Yep.
All right. Very cool. Andrew, anything? We didn't see any notes. Anything you want to cover before we wrap this thing up? I hate to say that since you just came back, but
I bought nothing this week. I've had a week where I've just been flat stick and performance reviews and.
Yeah.
So that's one. You know, it's the old. I hate reviewing other people's performance because it means I've actually got to think about how they perform.
Yeah. 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 It's no fun. One of my least favorite things to do, but it's what we do. So, Bill, you got any big plans? Got anything coming up? Any tech stuff coming up? That's gonna be cool.
cool-wise? No, other than a weather station update.
Oh, yeah.
Which people probably really could care less about.
No.
Can you monitor that with a PC?
You can check it right now. Mine's online all the time. KNJ Mills 1 on NOAA or wunderground.com. You can see live weather at my house. Like, anyone could give a hoot.
For weather geeks,
we like to exchange that stuff, and we kind of get an idea of what's coming towards us before it gets to us.
All right, so how do I get to the site?
The easiest way is go to wunderground.com, which is weatherunderground.com.
Yep.
If you use the zip code 08535.
08535.
And then you will my weather station out of the four that you might see will be KNJ Mills 1 is number the
now,
first one.
I just get it. Just says it just brings up.
Oh, six. I know why. Sorry, I subscribe. Let's see.
What are you trying to do to me, Bill?
No, the reason for that is because it picks up a default on that.
Okay, all right.
And mine's defaulted to obviously my station. So you're seeing something that probably says Prineville.
Yep.
So if you scroll down, it says Millstone Township, Millstone. You go select station select to the right of that.
Station select.
Hold on. Millstone Township TWP.
Right. And they changed that. So if you go Millstone Township, let's just take a look. I got to tell you which one it is because – there it is. The second one down will be Millstone Township. Yeah,
46.1 degrees Celsius.
Celsius, then yes, whatever the conversion of 46.5 Fahrenheit is, that would be just number two.
And did it automatically adjust for you, Andrew? Is it in Celsius?
Yeah, I didn't have to do anything.
So it's Millstone Township? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's Millstone Township. And once you click on that station, which is number two on the list,
right?
It will actually show Weather Station, Millstone Township, Millstone TWP.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Elevation 100 feet.
Yeah, whopping 100 feet. So tsunamis, watch out.
And the moon is waxing gibbous.
Yeah.
I like the way you say that, Andrew. It just sounds good when it's said by an Australian.
Waxing gibbous.
Yeah.
Today's almanac. What's that? Does that tell you when the fish are going to bite or something?
That's exactly right. Stripers are coming down. Striped bass are coming down from New England right now, and we'll be going out next weekend.
Nice.
Yes. Nice night fishing tonight. You got no wind. Awesome.
Bill,
what's this rig cost you, this weather rig? What are you into that thing?
If you go in and we're all looking up, if we go back up top and we hit under weather station, we actually click on Millstone Township with a comma, Millstone TWP, and click on that link. It will take you actually to my data. What I have is my whole setup is a Davis Vantage Plus 2. That will be it probably runs about $300 right now. You can actually get the lightning addition to it. So you put a rod in and it will actually detect lightning.
Awesome.
Detect it like what? I mean, like there's lightning in the area?
In the area, yeah. It will feel the charge and actually put a pulse through. And then it's wireless to my base station here in the house. So we have you can see the temperature, barometric pressure, wind speed, direction. And all, obviously rainfall. So that's all the sensors I have hooked up. But you can do UV ratings. You can hook up a lot of sensors.
Wow.
You can even buy them in Australia.
Yeah.
So Davis Vantage Pro 2 is $834.
Did you say how much your weather station costs? I asked you that, and I wasn't listening.
Yeah, no, that's good, as long as my wife's not. But yes, it's probably about – it was
– So it's not wife approved? It doesn't have a wife acceptance factor?
You know, for a weather station, she's like, really, do you need this much accurate data? Like, what are you doing? Like, are you going to put – what's the – she calls my weather station that movie. Oh, I can't think of it. Where they drop the sensors out.
Twister?
The
back of
the
Twister.
Yeah, Twister, but they called it something. Anyway, she calls it that.
Dorothy.
Dorothy, thank you.
I call it Dorothy, yeah.
That's it, yeah. She goes, oh, how's Dorothy doing? But yeah, it's about $400 in US right now. new versions coming out with more memory and a bigger solar panel, so it keeps that battery charged a lot. And everyone on the podcast can now see where I live.
What? Yeah. What got you into weather? I mean, what was the what's
you know what? I was a racer, and unfortunately retired last year. But from racing, we had horrible – where I live, you have either New York weather, which is way north, or Philly weather, which is southwest of us. You could not get an accurate weather report. And because of the Delaware Valley, the weather would change as soon as it came across from west to east into New Jersey. So we started this little network that would surround the racetrack with these weather stations, and we can figure out what was going to happen. So while you're in the trailer, you're setting up your car or you're watching to see if we're going to get a rain delay, I can look up on my phone and see what my weather station told me, see what my other friends were, and we can get an idea that, hey, don't worry about it. We're going to get rained out, you know, which would change as soon as the weather came over the Delaware.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. It's really geeky.
Well, you know,
I'd get so much trouble with one of these. I get in trouble checking the output of the solar array.
Yeah, I bet you are.
Sure.
The
I could get divorced over this.
Yeah. Well, there's and so Bill, you wouldn't consider yourself a weather geek then. I mean, you had a real need for the weather because you were, you know, going to see if you could race the next day, right? I mean, that's
But now in a hurricane, I have like three tires holding it down. So even the spikes I put in the ground, at 50 mile an hour winds, it will try to take that station, rip that station right out of the ground. So, you know, during the hurricane and everything else, no, I was out there. I was there with the camera taking pictures. I was, you know, I really liked the weather.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. But that you're right, though. The East Coast has that New York Philly bias, right? There's only really three cities on the East Coast, right? New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C.
And Boston, if you're...
Oh, that's true. Yeah. So we'll say
four. Don't really count.
Yeah. And so if you watch the media in that area, that's all they really care about. There's not South, they're not really the East Coast.
They could care. Oh, chances. Oh, with my mother-in-law, oh, it's going to rain. It's going to rain. I said, you're listening to New York stations. We're 50 miles away. Things are so much different because of the coastline.
Yeah.
You know, it wipes out storms. As soon as that weather comes across from Pennsylvania, it wipes them out.
And really?
People don't get it.
Yeah. Well, good. Appreciate you sharing that. That's kind of cool. That's one of those home tech items that, you know, one of those special home tech items like home security or like home automation that it's kind of got a very specialized niche. Do you have kind of a group of, you know, do you have a forums? Are there blogs that you follow for that kind of stuff?
Not for, on wunderground.com. Everyone has their own blog and we can share information and pictures and everything else back and forth. It's a really good site, especially if you want to spend the $10 to be like a member. You really get some really great information out of it.
That's cool. So, I see a new podcast coming on, like Weather Tech.
Yeah, you better have people all over
weather
the world.
With Bill.
Yeah,
weather news. We could talk. We could do reviews on weather equipment. We could talk about the weather. Everybody loves to talk about the weather.
We used to We actually tracked what the New York gentleman, I won't say his name, what he would say for the weather and how wrong he was. Burn him out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Bill, thanks for coming on tonight. Always good to have you and good to have you back. I'll let folks know that if they want to contact the show, best way to do that is podcast@theaverageguy.tv. They can talk to me. They can tweet to me on Twitter. That's a lot of T's, isn't there? And I don't have a pop filter, so it can make the pipe go pop. But they can get me on Twitter. Just tweet Jay Carlson. That looked really funny on the video. And let's see what else. Facebook, which guys, I need your help on Facebook. I need you guys out there, especially, Christian and Andrew. We're trying to build Facebook, at least our Facebook site, the Average Guy Network, into kind of a pseudo forums. And, so if you have questions, that you want to pose to us, you can ask them right there and we monitor that and, we'll get back to you. But guys, jump out there if you want to do any kind of interaction. We're going to see if we'll make Facebook work as a forums. Maybe it won't. We've been doing this for a couple months now. It hasn't worked real well. One more reminder that We are changing the RSS feeds and no more Podomatic. So if you're hearing this, that means you got it somehow. But if you are, I guess I don't need to remind people they're not if they didn't change their Podomatic feed, they're not listening. So I guess that reminder at this point doesn't do anybody any good. So anyways, if you do download this podcast not automatically every week, we've got a bunch of icons out there you can click and it will do it automatically for you, both iTunes and any other pod catcher. All right, that's it for the show. Thanks, Bill. Christian, great to have you on as always. Andrew, thanks for jumping in and with the in-laws there. It's good to have you. This will be another Home Tech Podcast. We'll do it all again next week, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Have a great week, and we'll see you guys back here next week. Thanks.
See you guys.
Take care.
Good night.
Yeah, I do like, even though the shock mount is not, you can hear that, right? You shouldn't with the shock mount. You should not hear that. But it does provide, for whatever reason, I'm not getting as much bass out of this thing as I was when it was attached directly to the arm. So if that's all it does, then that's worth it.
Yeah. No, definitely. You take that low frequency right out of the disc in the arm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I don't know, do you hear me tapping the desk? Yeah. So it does work for that.
I hear you laughing now.
That's my wife. She, she knows better than that. I get started and she puts a TV show on and she just cackles. She's a cackler. Hey, cackler. Hold it down over there. Trying to do a podcast. Okay, let's see. Bill, you got nothing.
What's that?
You got nothing in the notes?
Not yet.
You gonna throw some stuff in there? Yeah, that's right. Okay, we'll come back to you. We'll talk a little bit. Andrew will join us shortly.
Come on, a live stream.
We got a few out in chat. We got Jazzer J.
Are we under home server show on the live stream?
No, go to theaverageguy.tv/live. Yeah.
Do, do, do. Sorry, be stupid.
Nah, you're good, man. That's about it. I haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed the last one. That hurricane was coming.
Oh, it was. Irene was on
its way. Family, that young guy, you're like, we still had a lot of damage.
Did you?
Yeah. Ceiling came down in the kitchen. We just got redoing, yeah.
Oh, man. Just from water?
Yeah, one of the vent pipes from the second floor actually had a bad boot on it, and the wind was blowing so hard the opposite direction.
Yeah.
When it came around, and I'm out there in the backyard next to my weather station taking video, not caring that the whole ceiling is coming down. I'm like, look at all this data I'm getting.
Look at all this data that I'm getting in a hurricane. That's awesome.
Yeah. Real bright, too, dude.
Christian, you get any homework done while you're waiting for the show to start?
No, I'm pretty clear for tonight. Oh, I did a lot of work on Tuesday. So.
Nice. You have half day tomorrow?
Is that? Yeah.